So my name is Branson Matheson. We're going to do a talk that I've done a couple times, and this is a fun one. It's called TTL Level Penetration. And so what I'm going to talk about is who I am, to give you guys some scope so you'll know why I'm having this discussion with you. We're going to talk a little bit about the differences between us and them. We're going to look at a penetration from three different views. We're going to look at it from the hacker's point of view, the hackee's point of view, and then an operational point of view. What would you do to get in the middle of it? At the end, I'm going to talk a little bit about minimizing the impacts of a penetration, and then I'll open it up for Q&A. So, without further ado, who am I? So my name is Branson. I've been at NASA on and off for 24 years. I've worked lots of other places as well. I used to be a naval cryptologist. I enjoy teaching at hacking conferences. This is my third or fourth time speaking at a USENIX conference. But the bottom sentence is really a me. Tell me you can't get X to work with Y, and then it'll set me loose, and I will find a way to do it. That's the thing I like to do. I like to make things work the way they were never intended to, which is kind of the hacker creed, if you will. So, who are you? So let's get a poll of the groups. How many people in here would consider themselves geeks? Man, I better see just about every hand. How about managers? Okay. System administrators. Thank you. All right, how about network administrators? Good. So system administrators, most of you should probably also be network administrators at some level, right? You should understand DNS, DHCP, maybe even switch configuration, but at the general. Security administrators. Oh, I better see a lot more hands than that. If you're doing system administration, security should be a key component of your work, right? So we're going to talk about some of that. So how about hackers? Anybody else? One hand, really? Two? Three? Oh, two more from Peter. So we'll talk about that. So white hat hackers, how many consider yourself the good guys? Okay. How about black hat hackers? Wow, no hands. Who? How what? Well, gray hat, yes. So we're going to talk about white and black because, you know, it's kind of a thing. Gray hat is what I consider myself. But let's talk about white hats first, right? So we'll talk about system administrators. How many system administrators are out there? Well, based on the numbers that I've gotten, it's about one system administrator to every 30 associates in most places, right? Those numbers vary widely depending on your application, right? Google's a different case. But if you're talking about a business or a government installation or something, you're talking about one to every 30, right? So what about network administrators? How many network people are there in an environment? And it's about 1 to 200, right? Not many. Because the network's easy, right? That's the easiest part of the... That's what we like to tell them. How about security administrators, right? Outside of what sysadmins may or may not be able to do. There's about 1 to every 1,200 associates in the government sphere, at the very least. And in a lot of businesses, it's the same, right? You have a CISO, you have somebody doing IA. It's not a big department in your organization. But so let's look at they. Who are the black hats? Who are the bad guys, right? Are they people that attack? They penetrate maliciously? But the real thing is most hackers are trying to negatively impact your world, right? They're trying to do something, make your systems do something that it wasn't designed to do in a bad, bad way. But in general, you can kind of quantify the who are they looking at the different groups that are out there, right? There's script kiddies, hacktivists, foreign governments and not-so-foreign governments, organized crime, right? So this is kind of a broad spectrum of who the hackers are. The bad ones, the black hats. So are there more of them than us? Really, you think so? I don't think so. I think there's way more system administrators and way more network people and way more security people than there are people that are malicious hackers, specifically. But then we have this case, right? We have your users, which are really, they're kind of revert, they're hackers without knowing it, right? They do malicious things to your system whether you want them to or not. So dealing with them is always an entertaining thing. So we're ahead of the game, right? There's way more of us. We're trained. We have passion about what we do, right? We can always stay ahead. Vendors never screw up. Programmers always write good code, especially PHP programmers. We have a lot of passion about this, but I don't believe we're ahead at all, right? What's the easiest target when you're talking about systems? I'll give you a hint. It's not us, it's the systems, or I'm sorry, it's the users. Users are really, really easy to social engineer, and I have a whole talk about that, and if you're interested in it, I would love to have a conversation with you about it, because social engineering is a passion of mine. It's very, very easy, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. So let's talk about what you guys protect, right? You guys are sysadmins, and that's your job, is to make sure things are secure. So what do you protect? Well, let's talk about network connections. There's tons of network devices, right? Well, how many are there really? If you had everything hooked up, how many network addresses would there be? So we have MAC addresses, right? Everybody knows what a MAC address is? Even you sysadmins that didn't raise your hand when you said network administrator? You should know what a MAC address is, right? It's the device identifier. It's usually tied to a network interface card. So there's, I'm not going to try to read that number, 48-bit MAC address space is huge. We're ostensibly not out until 2100 of MAC addresses. I'll be interested to see how they handle that when we get there. But it's interesting because we're just going through the IPv4 part of it, right? So MAC address isn't too far. Most of us probably will be like worm food by the time this happens. But your kids probably will see it. But we have the IPv4 space, right? We have plenty of those left. No, we're out, right? They're trying to do some reallocation with blocks right now. But in the base level, almost all the blocks have been allocated. Now, whether everybody's using them or not, it's a different story. But we're kind of out. So what did we invent? Woo-hoo, IPv6, right? Tons of address space. So what has IPv6 addresses now? Your Mac, your phone, your toaster, the tires on your car. Realistically, there's 3.7 to 10 to the 21st addresses per square inch on this planet. I don't think we'll ever use them up. Not in a reality, but it's possible, right? Well, what else do you protect? So we have these addresses, so they're connected to what? Nodes on the network, right? How many realistic nodes are out there on the network? Well, based on the numbers I looked up and checked again this morning, 80% of households have at least one computer. That does not include phones, tablets, toasters, and that's a lot of machines when you start doing the number of households in the United States. So of those machines, how many machines are being sold? What's the climb? You can see the trend there, right? This is the number of PCs sold over the last many years. So there's more and more just PCs, just machines, being sold into the environment. That's one of the reasons we're running out of IP space, right? So the attack surface is getting bigger, larger. There's more options when you want to attack somebody. So then we have the software that you run on these, right? The secure, never wrong software. How many OSs are out there that run on these systems? Current ones. I'm not going back into the RSX 11 VMS days. But if you look at just operating systems, there are tons of operating systems that are current in use, right? And all of them are secure, right? None of them have never had their distros hacked or anything. Boy, there's a couple I should highlight on this slide. So on those systems, right, you have services. So you have tons of services that are operational on these machines, and some of them are default, right? Sendmail used to be the default. Now it's what, Postfix? A lot of the machines, particularly Windows machines, come with things like chat turned on, et cetera, and so on. And so inside of those services, each user has multiple local applications that they run every day, and all of these are secure, right? None of these has ever been hacked, ever. Right? So more attack surface. And then you go on top of that. Those applications run Web Connect services or Network Connect services, and all of these have never been hacked, right? We've never seen a Facebook hole or a LinkedIn hole or a Gmail hole or a Twitter hole. So our attack surface is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? Everybody understands what I mean when I say attack surface, right? That's when you're doing a penetration test and you're trying to attack things, this is the space that you're looking at that you want to attack, and it's the options that you have in front of you. So how many users are out there? Real, honest-to-God users. Well, I went and checked on those numbers again this morning. There's 141 million active users at the business environment. And interesting to me is that the government only hires 20 million of them. The other 120 million of them are just Joe user at home or Joe user in a business. And it's getting to the point where, you know, if you were a plumber, you never saw a computer, right, back in the day. The worst thing you had to worry about was plumber's butt. Nowadays, they carry around little PCs that tell them where they're going to go next. When they need a part, they put it in on the machine and it comes to them. So technology is moving deeper and deeper into what we would call the blue collar environment, and so are the vulnerabilities that they entail. Especially because, right, when we're talking about users, who are the most advantageous users to have as a system administrator? The clueless or the clueful? Right, there's a debate about that. Sometimes it's really not fun to have a rocket scientist that wants root on your box. That's a bad idea. But at the same time, it's really bad to have somebody that wants to run, I don't know, LimeWire on their desktop machine at work. So you start looking at the user base, and I'm not going to go into too much because there's huge debates there. It's almost VI Emacs, but it can be an interesting discussion. So then you have home users, right? 239 million home users on broadband. There's 85 million. So here's funny. I just got remarried, and my wife's family lives up in Upper Michigan, and yes, they still use AOL dial-in. But they use it. I mean, that is their connection to the internet. And I think we, as system administrators who are sitting on the internet, are a little spoiled and sometimes at the availability of the network. If anybody's been upstairs in this hotel, you've started to realize what expensive internet can be like. So just to give you some idea, though, that, you know, there's still a ton of people out there across a modem. Why? So we have users, right? And we have users like this. There's all kinds of interesting users out there, and they're not very helpful sometimes in maintaining the security of your environment. A lot of times your users are your key hole, right? When I'm doing a pen test, I don't go after your firewall, I don't go after your encryption, I don't go after your P25 radio, but I'm gonna go after your users because they're easy. They're really easy to attack. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So what's the math? How does all this work out? So we don't really have a firm number on the number of hackers, right? Duh. Same reason when I asked in here, nobody raised their hand, even if they were. White hats. So by the same token of what he said, a lot of people consider themselves gray hats, but not a lot of people would say, I'm a white hat, and all I do is go and save the princess from the tower. We don't really have numbers, but this is a conservative amount. People can blast me. We'll have fun talking about this over beers, but I conservatively estimate there's about 5 million real hackers. And when I say a real hacker, somebody that is actively trying to penetrate your box. They would almost be in the APT realm, but maybe not, right? Because how hard is it to be a real hacker these days? How hard is it to penetrate machines? Is it hard? Does anybody think? I see a lot of shaking heads. There's a reason. So what is our life like, right? Because of those little 5 million hackers, you'd figure we're way ahead, right? Well, our life looks like this. Right? We start going, something's wrong, and then it gets even better. Right? Anybody seen any of this on their desktop? How about getting these phone calls, right? It happens. Here's the simple one. And this one happened several times at a couple of colleges. If somebody leaves their screen unlocked, anybody can walk up to that screen and type mail president@whitehouse.gov and say, I'm going to kill you, and guess what? You're going to get a visit, and it'll be unpleasant. I've seen it several times. And they have to react. Is that a vulnerability to you? Is it a risk? Yeah, probably. Guess what? If you have down systems that are coming that need to be fixed, but you have the Secret Service banging on your door, guess who's getting priority? You start thinking about those things. So this kind of an interruption really causes problems, right? Why do I have two of these slides? Okay. So the advantage is Black Hat, right? They're the ones that have the advantage. And why? Well, so they have knowledge. How hard is it to get knowledge to be a hacker? It's not. It's very easy. Let's start just with tools, right? There are tons of tools, open source, free, you can download them tools to do penetration. Now, as a penetration tester, I'm happy about this because it gives me tools to use. But at the same token, it's also giving them tools to use. And none of these tools are very hard to use. Honestly, Metasploit, once you've learned it, you can pwn a Windows box in as fast as you can type. It's really, really easy, especially if it's unpatched or it's Windows XP. Right? What other places can they get knowledge from? How about the books? Has anybody seen any of these books? And yes, there really is a Hacking for Dummies. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. But if you haven't, there are a lot of really good books out there on hacking, and not just the art of actual, you know, code reversal or inline stream break-ins. They also talk about social engineering, right? Kevin Mitnick has an awesome book on that, and it's a good read. How about actually getting up-to-date and current information without having to go to your library? tons of websites that you can get hacks on. If you remember that last one, you've been around for a while. But also, if you don't go to that last one from work, the ads tend to be colorful. That's a good word. So certification courses, right? There's another way you can get information. Now, some of them are expensive, like SANS. They're, you know, $2,000 and $3,000. So that's usually corporately sponsored. But Security Plus, not that hard to get. Not that hard to get the information for. And guess what? All the courseware, most companies now make second and third books for the courseware of this that you can just go buy at your local Barnes & Noble, Starbucks, Borders, wherever you're going to buy it. All that information is out there. It's very, very easy to get. What's another place you can get information? How about conferences? How about this conference? Do you think anybody yesterday in Matt's talk learned anything they might find useful? Sure. So, and believe me, if you go to ShmooCon, if you go to DerbyCon, if you go to DEF CON, you see Zero Day, and you see all kinds of interesting ways to hack people. That information is useful for us that in the security industry that are trying to improve security, because we use it as a basis to go to somebody and say, hey, Shillage, you make really crappy locks, and you're locking everything. How about making good locks? It's not that hard. Add a spool pin. That one little barrier to entry will help immensely. So, as an example, again, conferences are a good place to get. And where's the advantage, right? To the black hat. Because we all go to those conferences, and we'll use the information for good. They'll go to those conferences and use the information for bad. We, as conference organizers, how do we know who's going to do what with what? Is it proper for us to block that information? Not really. Now, I did notice Matt was very circumspect in how some of the information was gathered and used yesterday, and I was applauded it. I thought that was amazing. It was a good, he balanced it very well. But some, especially the hacking conferences, they don't balance it very well. They'll go right down into the dirty details and then demonstrate it on the screen, usually on somebody in the audience. It's really awesome. So speed, is this an advantage to us or them, right? There's huge advantages to the hackers. Huge, huge, huge. Because things like Nmap, which is a simple program. Everybody familiar with Nmap? If you're not, go look at it. It's a really useful tool just to look at your own network. It'll tell you things you didn't know almost every time. But it'll scan about 255 hosts in 4 seconds. Bink, I know everything on that subnet. Very easy to do. It's easy to detect when you do that, because you know, in the old days, your collision light would be lit up like a Christmas tree. You can have Nessus. So Nessus is a vulnerability scanner, and what it does is it walks the ports, and then it applies vulnerabilities to the ports and tries to exploit them. It can walk a network in about 4 minutes on a good machine, right? I wouldn't run it on a Raspberry Pi, but on a Mac, it'll do well. And then, like I said, Metasploit on a vulnerable host, it's as fast as you can type it. It really takes no time at all to penetrate a host. And it's interesting from a system administrator's point of view to actually do some of those exercises. I would encourage people to go look at Metasploit and see what it does. It gives you some scope. I don't want to make your tinfoil hat too much thicker, but I do want you to start thinking about those in those terms. Well, so then there's encryption, right? Anybody still use WEP? If not, why not? 6 seconds, literally. Air crack, bang. On your Macs, if you've got a Mac, go get KizMac. It'll do the same thing, 6 seconds, bang. Real easy. Rainbow tables, right? Landman can be reversed, and then the guys that put out the, 25 GPU core machine that would take down a 14-character Landman in, I think, what he said, 6 minutes? It's pretty fast. John the Ripper, if you're using a less than 8-character, it'll do it in less than 45 minutes. It's pretty quick. So what Matt said yesterday is true. A lot of things that are using strong encryption, AES 256, if anybody's used TrueCrypt, that's considered still very, very secure and stuff like that. But if you're using old technology, particularly like, I don't know, if you have a Windows PDU in your environment, guess what? That automatically forces Landman. In a lot of environments, people don't know that. They'll bring a Windows XP machine into the environment and they find they can't connect it to the AD instance. And somebody says, ooh, how do I fix that? And they'll go flip the bit in the security systems, and now all of a sudden they can connect, and that Windows XP box works, but it means everybody's password is now vulnerable, because what you're doing is enabling Landman. Landman's not hard to crack. So looking at the GPUs, the old, and this is old, this is not counting the new guy stuff, I hadn't had a chance to put that in, but an AT4890 can crack 224 RC564 keys in 3 days. It'll walk the entire key space that fast. pretty impressive what the machines can do. And you can buy PCs now with multiple 16X PCIe slots and just slap GPU cards in them. Even better, Amazon now has a GPU cluster you can rent time on. Want a crack? Go ahead. And it's not expensive. It's so easy. So the advantage, again, is to the black hat, right? They are the ones that can break in and get use all this information because it's available to them. It's easy to get. So what about rules? Who has the advantage with rules? What do the black hat have for rules? Let me show you. They have none, right? Their only rule is don't get caught. And that's not too hard these days, right? Even things like Tor, which people have done some pretty good work on finding people through the exit node evaluation, is still, you're raising that barrier to entry. So again, I'm gonna call advantage to black hats. And where does that end us up, right? Where has strong black hattery, for lack of a better term, ended us up? It's this, right? You're starting to see groups like Anonymous and others doing good, bad, I'm not gonna get in that political discussion, but what it's been is an enabler. All of a sudden, smaller groups can have a larger impact on things that they never would have had impacts on before. So interesting, true story. I had a problem with a certain cell phone carrier that uses yellow as one of its colors, and was on the phone with them, and they had overcharged me and proceeded to tell me they would never fix it. I went and registered Sprint has terriblecustomerservice.com, put a website up, and sent a letter to the ombudsman. 2 days later, gone, taken care of. Why? Why do I have that power? Anybody? Crickets? Well, I have, yes, so I'm a geek. I have that power to go make a domain. But it's more to the point that as individuals, because the internet is such a global piece of equipment and it has such coverage, you can have impact at that level. Now, people can debate whether what I did was right or wrong, but I guarantee these guys would use that idea and several others like it. So it's an enabling tool for good, for bad, for you can debate the parts of that. But we're not ahead, right? We're behind the curve. And it's harder and harder every day for us to maintain our systems. The bar for entry gets lower every day. Why? Because people write cool tools. People make interesting hacks. And the bigger the attack surface gets, the easier it's going to be to attack those machines. But again, I submit, what's the easiest attack? Users, sure. So how do we know that the attackers are ahead, right? We've posited this based on the attack surface and based on the number of machines and nodes and network addresses. Well, so I have two charts for you. This one's an interesting one. This is the vulnerabilities over time off the open source vulnerability database. We had a little bit of a bounce in 2011, quarter two, but it hasn't grown very small, and that's 1,200 vulnerabilities a quarter that are coming out. If anybody's curious, 2006 right there, that was right near LSAS, which was a gift. So here's another favorite bit. So I'm going to ask you guys, tell me what this is. Anybody? Right. So this is survival time on an unpatched machine on the network. So what's that? Median's about 5 minutes. Anybody installed a service pack in 5 minutes? So if you're not in a protected environment and or in an environment that's been compromised, can you realistically patch your machine before they get it? No. Isn't that a little bit of a scary thought if you start thinking about it? It's a lot easier to penetrate. So people standing up VMs, right? Most people are now standing up VMs already patched. This is a good thing. That's a mitigation to it. But you get your brand new Windows 8 box that had been sitting on a shelf for a couple of weeks and you plug it into the network to patch it up. Do you think you'll get it patched before it gets attacked? Maybe, maybe not, right? So what we're gonna do is walk through a penetration. And I'm going to, so I do pen testing, and I'm gonna walk you through how a penetration happens and what, as a hacker, you think about. So the first thing you look at is your target. You do some reconnaissance. You probe your target to see what options there are. You exploit it. You hide yourself, right? And then you reap the benefits, right? Keep right on trucking. So what is a target? So a target, how do you know if you are a target? Well, you may have something I want, right? Maybe the latest code to, I don't know, Halo. You're doing something I don't want you to do. Maybe you're a government entity or something like that. You appear easy to attack. Maybe you're running Windows servers for all of your web servers. That might be something I'd like to look at. To be a notch in the saddle to get them. So this is where NASA comes in. The hackers, obviously they're looking for information and, you know, trying to prove that we never landed on the moon, but they're also trying to do that one thing, and that's send email from a NASA.gov address. That's all they do. Half the time when they break in, that's the first thing they do is they turn around and send to a mailing group, I broke in NASA at NASA.gov. It's something that simple. And of course, they're paid to do it, right? Foreign governments, not so foreign governments, organized crime, et cetera, and so on. And so what? How do they get their information? Well, so that Google is like one of the easiest ways to gather information about somebody. If you haven't done it, highly recommend it. Johnny Long used to have a wonderful book about pulling information from Google. It's a lot of it is still very, very apt. And there's all kinds of cool tools out there, right? War driving. I thought one of the coolest things is somebody in Berkeley put a war driving kit on his bicycle. And he would drive around finding open wireless spots that way. You can now do it from an airplane, a small airplane, quite easily. Works very, very well. Netcraft. Everybody familiar with Netcraft? It's a tool that's been around for a very, very long time, and it shows aggregate network usage. It's how you can tell who the highest users are on the net. Anybody guess? What's the biggest use of the internet right now? Huh? No. Netflix. They knocked porn off the top not too long ago. Dude, porn was 66% of the net at one point, between Usenet and between streamed and between files and da-da-da-da. And actually, funny story, when I was evaluating for a customer where to put their site, I went to Netcraft and found what the three highest sites were. I called them up, and it was the place that hosts RedTube, YouPorn, Xvideos, da-da-da-da-da. But they had the highest availability and the biggest peerage because they had the biggest streams. Interesting point. Pig and Multigo. So if you haven't played with Multigo, it's a really cool tool. It's free. You can download it. You can get the paid for version. But what Multigo does is you can put in a name, an address, a phone number, a website, anything like that. The name of this talk. This is one of the things I use. And it will go and search exhaustively lots of databases on the net looking for that information and build you a tree, a lexical tree of information and how it's all linked together. And you can expand for it. I told parents of waylorn children who are doing a lot of stuff at home at my school, this is a good way to follow up on your kid. You could put your kid's information in there and find out where they've put information out on the internet. Sometimes they got some rude surprises. Social engineering, right? My favorite. Call a support line. Can I change my password? That's never worked, right? Ask Sarah Palin. Right? She got pwned easy. Why? Well, so what do normal companies use to evaluate whether or not your password, you have the right to change your password? What do? They ask you questions like, what was your mother's maiden name? What was your underwear size when you were 3? I mean, all these obscure questions. But because Sarah Palin was such a public figure, all of her information was publicly out there. Guy called in, they got asked the questions, he had the right answers, he got the new password, and boom, he owned her account. Not hard to do. You start thinking about it in those terms, right? You can open a fake account. Right? See that all the time. If you ever get a Facebook request from Jessica Rabbiton, don't accept it. That's me. Hacking. And you can just research a geographical region, right? You can look for a target. And I'll give you an example of that in a minute. So then they're going to probe. And probing usually entails walking your network, looking at it in ways to find a hole, right? You can use Nmap, Nessus. I've talked about some of these other tools, OWASP. And these are the free ones, right? There's tons of payware tools, Core Impact and several others, that will do this at a far higher level than the open source ones will. I'm not saying the open source ones are not effective. They are usually very effective, especially on sites that are not as active in maintaining their security. So, and they're going to exploit you. So what are they going to do to exploit you? Well, they may do something really easy and find a vulnerability. They can just whack with Metasploit. That's usually not a hard one. They may try to brute force you, right? There's tools out there like Hydra, which will walk A, and walk through the entire space. Interesting point and something to think about with Hydra, because we saw this. How many people have ye old 3 strikes and you're out on your logins, right? No hands, I don't need them. But what happened at a particular site is somebody enumerated all the users of the environment. They figured out what their email address was. And from that, they figured out what their name was. And then they wrote Hydra to go bang on their name through IMAP 3 times with bad passwords. He DDoS'd the entire site, knocked everybody off of email. And you said, oh, well, it's only good for 15 minutes. He just kept doing it every 15 minutes. And the poor mail admins, they didn't know what was going on, and the AD admins finally figured out where it was coming from, but they didn't have a good solution to it. They ended up having to shut mail off from the internet to keep their users' ability to log in inside. So that's an interesting way, a very simple way, you can have an outside impact with having no access whatsoever, but you can really impact the company, right? Something to think about. So once they get in, what are they going to do? Are they going to put a big sign up? Or are they going to put a background up like I had earlier? Maybe if they're trying to be funny. But likely they're going to try to hide. They don't want you to know they got in. Why? Because they can do it again. And they can use that to do what we call pivot. So once they've got this box at this security layer, they can now pivot and start attacking another security layer and walk right on down the road. So there's lots of tools out there you can do it. You can clean out access logs. You can obfuscate network traffic, right? Everybody knows you can SSH over ICMP. You knew that? Yes. You can SSH over pretty much anything, AH, ESP, all the TCP protocols you can tunnel through. It's not hard to do. So when you're monitoring and you suddenly see a spike in traffic of a certain type that you don't normally see, that's a good indicator. I'll show you how to do that in a minute. And they're going to disable monitoring systems, right? So if you have Nagios running or you have NRPE running, they might replace it with their own version that gives the answer that's okay every time or something of that nature. Easy to do. Code's out there, right? A lot of times they'll download the code and do the builds right on the host they're attacking and then put the code in place on the host they're attacking and then go delete the source that they downloaded. Easy to find them. So once they've got in and they've set up this environment for them to then turn and start pivoting and hacking other things, they're going to collect their reward, right? They're going to start looking for useful information. They may use you as part of a botnet, right? That's become a very common thing. They'll put a keyboard logger in, because that's really useful. Sometimes hard to defeat. There's this whole thing about anybody seen the Microsoft mouse thing, this whole discussion about that? So the Internet Explorer, you can install code via a web server on the Internet Explorer that once it's installed, you can see all the mouse movements, even if Internet Explorer is minimized on the system. And while that may or may not be useful, one of the things that they had done to defeat keyloggers was to put a mouse keyboard on the screen so that you would type the password in there so that the keylogger couldn't pick it up. Somebody found a piece of code that uses that exploit that then goes looks for those keyboards and starts recording those keystrokes. Interesting. So, they've gotten in, they've done naughty things. Now, what would the hackers or the hackee see? If you were the one that were on the receiving end of this, what would you see? So we're going to talk about this in a matter of time. Because does anybody here believe that you will not be hacked? If you do, raise your hand. Stand up and cheer, because I would love to talk to you. Because I think anybody can be hacked, right? The Pentagon thought they were pretty secure, and somebody beat them with a USB stick. That's all it took. So we're going to talk about it in time, right? I have this nice little timeline. And we're going to start at T0, and everybody in this room should know what that date is. If you don't, you haven't done Unix in a while. But the first thing they're going to do is determine who they should attack, right? They're going to go after and find out, who is my vulnerable person? Where should I go? And so what you have to do to yourself is you have to ask yourself, are you a risk, right? You do a risk evaluation as part of a security plan. A lot of people don't take this part of it into consideration, so I do want to delve on this a little bit. What is a risk, right? Does everybody know what the hard definition of a risk is? This is one of my favorite versions of it, right? Because if you're a risk, if you have government secrets maybe, if you have money, if you have the latest and greatest game, if you're a movie studio with the most recent version of, say, The Hobbit, you can guarantee the hackers are looking for that out on the net right now, because once they get it, they can then turn around and torrent it and yee-haw. So all of these things, I think, apply. ISPs are good targets, right? Because once you get them, you get information on everything that's crossing their network, and you can make good use of it, right? You may have something that others want, right? Software development, free open source. We've never seen, say, I don't know, the FreeBSD repository get hacked and all kinds of things get shoved into it. How about SSH? Yep, got that too. And that one was really classic. I thought that one was very, very well done. Because why? Name me a Unix that does not have SSH installed on it these days. And a lot of them don't use, will use the OpenSSH source as their basis. So that hack went lots of good places, right? Maybe they're doing something I don't like, right? A security company doing bad stuff. There was all kinds of fun talk about that several years ago, where they were doing stuff for the election that was questionable. Maybe you're a financial institution and you're sponsoring or you're not sponsoring, right? Visa got nailed pretty heavily by Anonymous when they took away their ability to collect money. Same thing when WikiLeaks lost their ability to collect money. Anonymous turned and banged on them. So you raise your risk based on some of the actions you do. Now, does that mean you don't take the action based on that risk? Depends on how vulnerable you think you are. But they may look for something to attack you with in that vulnerability list. So unpatched operating systems, right? Those are easy, right? Oh, and one side note, somebody said it the other day. How many people believe that 0 days are used at conferences? Really? So the answer is no. A 0 day is worth tons of money. They sell 0 days on the black market. And they really do sell 0 days on the black market. O-days are out there all over the place. So maybe you're using an Android operating system, right? Android's very easy to compromise between applications. Maybe you're using iOS. Anybody have an iPhone in here? You know what your root password is? It's Alpine. It is. All iPhones, that's the root password. You only have to get through that security barrier and you'll own the phone. When AT&T originally released the iPhone, one of the things they didn't do is prevent one iPhone from talking to another iPhone on the back-end network. And so when they started releasing the jailbreak for the iPhone, they had two options. They were like safe and hacker mode. And a lot of people picked hacker mode. And so that immediately enabled SSH on the device. Somebody then wrote a tool on their hacked iPhone to then go walk the network behind it and turned around and owned a whole bunch of iPhones. Not hard. It's those kind of vulnerabilities you have to worry about. So how do you know if you're being evaluated? You probably won't know if you're being evaluated. You have to make a risk determination on your own time. You have to kind of think about it and say, am I a target? And so the next thing they'll do is perform reconnaissance, right? They're going to start to come in. You probably won't know they're casing you at that point. You might not. But you can start to look for business indicators, right? Maybe an increase in hang-up calls in your support center. Maybe an increase for publicly available information, right? Can you send me the corporate directory? Yeah, I don't work for you. I'd just like a copy of the corporate directory. Invalid support calls, right? How many support calls are hung up because they're asking for invalid information? Might be an indicator you want to look at. Some non-direct indicators, right? A direct unwarranted increase in valid web traffic. So it's not Christmas and it's not book sale day, but suddenly you see a spike in your web traffic that still looks valid. Well, maybe you should start to think about that, right? An increase in friend requests. Anybody heard of FB Pwn? FB Pwn is a really cool tool that I can take a target and it will walk their friends list. It'll create a new Facebook user that has a name very similar to one of the Facebook list, one of the names on my target's list, and then it sends that person a friend request. Those friend requests usually get approved, which means it then downloads the entire target's Facebook profile, all the information it can get. They have the same thing for Twitter. Those kinds of tools exist, and they're really easy to use. So probe. Once they've figured out who you are, and they figure out you're the guy I want to go after, they're going to start to probe you. Well, what will you see when they start to probe you, right? The obvious one is increased network load. Maybe, right? There's distributed denial of service. Everybody knows about that, right? It's when they send ICMP or something other nasty your way from 100,000 different places. Well, what if they probed you from 100,000 different places? Would you be able to identify that was happening? Maybe if they all sent SINs, right? That's an easy indicator. But if they tried to do a real connection from a bunch of different places, you're really not going to know. So you have to look for things like load on a specific port, right? You see somebody banging on the IMAP port or your telnet port. If you have that open, I spank you. Changes in your application logs, right? Suddenly your mail log jumps in size. That might be something to look into. An HTTP error log that's usually pretty clean because your programmers never put crap in the HTTP error logs, right? Suddenly it gets a bunch of indicators you haven't seen before. If you're on the Windows side, your event log, right? Your firewall logs will start to show a lot more blocked accesses than they ever showed before. These are all indicators that can be looked for, and we'll talk about some tools that do that for you. So then, once they've searched your network, they found the vulnerability, they're gonna turn around and go bang, and they're gonna exploit you, right? They're gonna break into your network. Are you gonna know they did it? Does anybody know right when they're exploited? No, not really. Unless you happen to be looking at exactly the right place at exactly the right moment, the chances of you knowing that you've actually been had are minimal, right? It almost never happens that way. So once they exploit you, they're gonna turn around and penetrate you. No, we're not going down that road. So once they penetrate you, how will you know? Time for some water. Right, you'll start to see change files on the file system, right? Maybe your bin sh gets changed. Maybe your bin login gets changed on a Unix box. Maybe your system 32 files start to look a little bit funny. They don't look the same way they did before. You'll see change behavior of system load, right? Start in the compile tools. You'll see more processes there. They may even be named things that you expect to see, but they're still going to be there. You may see applications start doing things you don't expect them to do in terms of memory load, file sizes, right? You'll see change behavior in your network traffic. Suddenly you'll see them making connections or doing scanning from hosts that shouldn't be running scanners. Right? On a Unix file system, and I know a lot of people are sysadmins across the board, but a Unix file system, there are so many ways to hide files, right? If you create a large file and you open a program against it and then you delete the file, is the file gone? No. It's still out there. As long as that program exists, the file exists inside the file system. Right? If you create a file and you mount something on top of it, is that file gone? No, it's still out there, and it's accessible from any program that can find the inode. So there's lots of ways to hide stuff on it, but you have to look on it, right? Maybe your file system suddenly changes size dramatically. That might be an indicator you want to go look for, especially if you can't find it, right? So once they break in, they're going to clean up. They're going to go and remove all the evidence that says somebody's here, right? And how would you know that? Well, one of the ways we find people usually is the first thing they do is they go clean out the last logs, right? They put a big hole in the last log that suddenly says nobody was logged in over this time and you know you were logged in over this time. That's an easy way to find people. You'll find the change files, right? We'll talk about some tools that do that. The applications and the network traffic. This is all good. So once they get in, right, they're going to expand their attack to other local hosts. They're going to pivot is the term. And they may look for hosts on the network they're in. They may look at a different security level, right? Most people do this app stack thing where you have web server, application server, database server, and you put firewalls in between them. Once you've gotten one, you can start to work on the next level down, right? The more benefit, the better. But realistically, once I get a web server, I kind of have access to every piece of information I need because the tools are going to get to the rest of it for me. I don't have to go down to those levels. But their real objective, usually, is to make money, right? That's what they're going after. They're trying to find a way to get in there, use this information to do something else, malicious or otherwise, and a lot of it's for money. So once you've gotten somebody in, it's really hard to know you've gotten them out, right? Yeah, I'm going to go with almost impossible. If you have a host that's been compromised, is there a way to clean that host up? Reinstall, wipe it. Okay. Anybody heard of a BIOS? Kernel, rootkit, they're out there. Guess what? There's rootkits for hard drives now. Not the data part, the controller part. And they're out there, and they're not hard to install. They're actually pretty easy to install. It's a little scary. So once a host is compromised, it's a big question. You have to make a risk evaluation. I think we'd all agree that penetration is bad for some definition of penetration. But how do you minimize the risk, right? What do you have to do to minimize the risk to yourself, right? You have to insert yourself in the process. You as operations need to be the people that get involved. And so now we're going to look at a penetration a third time. And this time we're going to look at it from an operational point of view and look at the different points in the timeline and how we might address some of these issues, right? So anybody tail their syslog? Does it look something like that, right? How do you get useful information out of there, right? Anybody ever run an unfiltered TCP dump on the inside or outside of their network? Can you get anything out of that except for a screen full of noise? Right? It's too hard to get that information, but this is the key that you're looking for, right? Somewhere in there, there's a useful bit of information that you need to have. And so how do you get that information out? Well, you're going to hear this word about 100 times. Get ready. Baseline. You need to understand your network at a fundamental level and what its operation should be at any point in time. And if you don't have that information, then it's really hard to understand a discrepancy, much less find it. So let's go back to our timeline. And let's talk about who to attack, right? That's the first decision they make. So you generally can't change who you work for. I mean, especially in today's economy, it's getting better, right? And we as professionals have a lot more options than I think a lot of people do. But unless that's really an issue for you, I look at it as a challenge. I would rather them try, so I have something to do. And you can't change the information that's out on the network about you, right? There are companies that say they can. I love to listen to those radio ads. It is so hilarious. They have obviously never heard of the Internet Archive. So it's hard to mitigate that kind of information. It's almost impossible. But what you can do is you can baseline, right? How many people have ever Googled themselves? How about your company? How about your CIO's name? How about the software that you use? There's tons of information out there about your company, and a lot of people don't know it. You should take the time to go look. I'm not saying make an exhaustive survey, but even if you just take Multigo and run it and get a baseline view of what your stuff should look like, and then do it again in 6 months and compare it, you'll have some idea of how the information is developing, right? Marketing people do this very successfully. If you have an SEO company that's trying to promote you on the net, they're going to look at the information you have now and the information 6 months later and try to improve it so that you get more hits, you get more sales, you get more people. But like I said, I love Multigo. It's free, it's cheap, it's easy. You should also scan the social networks, right? Facebook, look for trending on Twitter, those kinds of things. You should critically examine that public information. Your website, right? Everybody looked at the source of their website, made sure there's no paths in there, because I can tell you how many times I found them. Things like, older things like IIS used to shove paths in the comment fields inside of websites. It was a gift. You should look at your sales propaganda. Make sure there's no pathing in there. I know that's obvious. Most times there's not, but there is sometimes information in there that you probably don't want to give out. White papers, articles, and blog postings, right? Just keep up with the active information on the internet. This is an important factor, I think, in managing your security profile and understanding your risk profile. So when they do reconnaissance on you, right, that's the next step they'll take, you probably won't know they're casing you. But there are some things you can do, right? Baseline. Monitor your application logs. I think this is important. Anybody here using Splunk? That seems to be the new golden child of information management. I hear a lot of people using it. NASA's getting ready to do a massive deployment of it. It's pretty cool stuff. But there's free stuff out there as well. Logzilla, Logly. There's tons of tools out there that you'd use to look at your logs. If anybody's interested, look for Tina Bird. She's done whole articles on information management from logs. You should monitor your system and application load, right? Everybody knows how their system should be running. If they're not running the way you expect, you should want to know why. Right? Nagios is probably one of the more popular tools out there. There's Cacti, which will do SNMP graphing for you. Webalizer, which looks at your logs. MailGraph, which looks at your mail stuff. And look at your service call loads, right? Everybody here have a call center or an inbound phone number for support issues? Everybody using a ticketing system to manage that information? Why do you want to do that? Anybody? Why do you have a ticketing system? Tracking and reporting. I mean, it's good for customer service, right? Because when you're working on a problem and you hit, I did this, click, and it sends them an email saying, hey, he did this, it gives your users really good feedback, but it also gives you good feedback on how things are going in your operation. I'm a big fan of Track, only because I do a whole bunch of other things with it. RT, Tivoli, there's tons of things out there, Redmine. You can pretty much take most of the open source software management tools and wedge them into that sphere if you want and you don't want to spend the money. So the next thing they're going to do is probe you, right? This is one of the ones that you would think, oh, it's easy to go find them, right? It's really easy to know that you're being probed, right? How do you know? Well, you can baseline. You can install an IDS. Anybody have an IDS on the outside of their network? Why?
Noise.
I'm curious. Why do you have an IDS on the outside of your network? Really? That sounds like management by magazine ad. That's a Dilbertism almost, right? I would say install an IDS, but install it not on your perimeter. Install it inside your network so that you can see what's going on. If you install it outside, the signal-to-noise ratio is in freaking insane. Especially my side company's name is Sand Security. Boy, was that stupid. Put the name of security into my URL. Do you know how my SSH logs look? I get banged on constantly, all the time. Only because of that exposure, I think. You can get Awesome if you haven't played with it. It's an open source SIM. It's free. It's easy to install. You can download it and play with it in a VM. I highly recommend it. It's got a lot of good tools built into it and somewhat integrated. There's another one we'll talk about in a minute called Bro. You want to review your application logs, right? We've talked about some of these. And these are the tools that you can use to do it. AWS Stats is a really useful one, MailGraph and Webilizer. I generally use all three in an environment pretty consistently. Event Log Explorer is good from the Windows side. It's a useful tool to go through your event logs and get something useful out of them because I don't like their format. I think it's hard to use. Look at your system logs, right? Use LogWatch. Do NTOP. Anybody here use NTOP? Oh, it's my favorite tool. Do not expose this web service to anything public, ever. Do not do it. It is bad. It is insecure. But if you can put it on a protected network so that you can get to it, the information you can get out of NTOP is invaluable. It gives you some really, really, really nice graphing capability, and you can see changes in your network pretty quick. For those of you with Macs, I have a tool called GeekTool. I think it's $2.99 now. It's really useful because what it does is it allows you to put logs on the background of your screen, along with images from other things. So I keep the ISC, the Internet Storm Center's current status is up on the background of my screen, and I also use it to tail logs and look at some other things. But one of the things I definitely put on there is my NTOP log that shows over a week's period of time the use cases of all the network ports. And when I see that every day, when something changes, I know it really fast, and it's actually helped out. We found somebody had walked in with a fob and infected a host, and that host was trying to get outbound to talk to its botnet controller. And we found it like that because all of a sudden there was a spike on a port we'd never seen before. But something that simple can be really useful, so I highly recommend NTOP. Aggregate your information, right? Everybody centralizes their system logs, yes? Everybody has a syslog server. You should if you don't. Install a SIEM, right? Bro, we talked about Awesome. Again, easy and free. These are not big steps. Now, is open source free? Really? No. There's TCO, right? It takes time to learn some of these tools, and I'm not going to say that it won't take time. It will. However, what I have found is that the tools like Awesome and Bro, which are integrated for you, save you a ton of time in learning how to do that, right? It's not easy to put those stuff together. So then, here we go again. Penetration, right? How will you know you're being penetrated? How will you know when somebody's broken into your network, right? Baseline. Your IDS on the inside should be your best indicator for that. You can do things like make fake accounts and then tell your IDS to look for that name crossing in clear text. Something that simple can be a really useful indicator. Credit card companies do this all the time. They have fake credit card numbers that they'll put in their databases. If those credit card numbers cross security barriers, they know there's a problem. They know there's an issue. Monitor your traffic, right? NTOP and Snort. Monitor your network devices. Right? If you use Cacti, you can do SNMP queries and build really nice RRD graphs of all your ports. You should probably do it on your trunks and see what's going on. But manage your signal to noise. I have huge arguments with my management about this sometimes because they like to include me in mailing lists, which is great, but it's hard enough to manage just the input on mail that I get, much less the systems that are texting me about things, right? Does everybody get their log mail every morning? Does everybody really read every single freaking line in your log mail every morning? It's too much information. So managing signal to noise is very, very, very important. I can't stress that enough. It's a personal thing because it'll help you relax in your job sometimes too. System monitoring, load and disk space, right? Again, obvious one. Spiceworks is a free tool for Windows monitoring. It's payware, I think it's adware actually, but it's pretty slick. I've used it in several places. But you can profile your internal systems. You can get an idea of how they operate. And that's an experience thing. It's something you have to do over time. You have to spend a little bit of time to do it. But once you do it, if there's a discrepancy, you'll recognize it really quick, right? And then changes to key files, right? I use Subversion and check in my entire Etsy directory minus the password file. And so if something changes in there, I know it pretty quick because I do an SVN diff pipe mail Branson. Something that simple is useful. CF Engine, Chef, and Puppet will all do alerts if it sees the file change that shouldn't, and then you can decide whether you want it to automatically pop the file and fix it for you. You maybe do, maybe don't. And then ye olde things like Tripwire and Anubis and some of the other tools that have been out there for a while. Cleanup, right? What can you do to prevent them from being found? Or let me rephrase that. What can you do to prevent them? I have this thought and I can't articulate it. What do you do to prevent them from hiding? I'm tired. A lot of times when somebody hacks a machine, the first thing they're going to do is change the state of that machine such that the machine looks normal again, for some definition of the word normal, right? A lot of people still use non-writable media, and we looked it up the other day. You can still get green bar if you want to print to a printer. But sometimes that's useful. Has anybody here read The Cuckoo's Egg? Yeah, good book. If you haven't, I recommend you write it down. It's a little dated. Don't watch the movie. Cliff Stoll's a terrible actor. But the book was fantastic because it walked through a hack, and a lot of the information he generated was based on just using a printer. And it also gave him logs that he could use in a court of law, which is also an interesting discussion you can have. Isolate your log server. There's no way you can realistically, in my view, isolate a machine to the point where you can't say it won't be hacked, right? But what you're doing is you're raising the bar and lowering the risk that it will actually get penetrated. Monitor those things for change, right? You want to do central configuration management, Puppet, all the other tools that have been talked about here. You want to do integrity monitoring of files and systems. You need to have a plan. How many here have a really good incident management? How many sysadmins have been part of an incident, a security incident? Did you guys do it amorphously, or did you have a plan already established? Not so good? So this is a whole different talk I have, and I think that in the idea that system administration needs to move forward with the idea of security as well, I think system administrators should go walk a mile in the IT security shoes. And more importantly, I think IT security should come down and walk a mile in our shoes so that they have some idea of what's going on. Part of that would engender a relationship that would improve, I think, incident handling. Because ostensibly, IT security should have some idea of what should happen if you get hacked, right? What your next steps are. You need to be a part of that, a big part of it. You should be part of the planning stages. You should be part of the testing stages of it. And you should be integral to how it operates. Because a lot of times you'll make changes to the system that will invalidate IT security being able to find out what happened. Maybe there's good reason for it. Maybe there's not. But you don't know that if you don't integrate and you don't discuss. So having a security awareness plan for your associates is hella important when you're talking about social engineering. It's nice to have saying, hey, don't share your C drive to Betsy so she can get at your music. That's nice to do. But at the same time, for them to understand that social engineering is persistent. If somebody wants to get in, that's going to be the easiest way to do it. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten in. And it's usually simple things. We found a bank that had had lost a laptop during a financial audit. So these guys had put all the information on there, and they went to lunch, and they went in a Jeep, and they left the laptop in the back of the Jeep, and somebody unzipped the Jeep and took the laptop. Well, that information has to be made public, right? If a bank loses your information, they have to make it public pretty darn quick. I found that out, and so to penetrate the bank, what I did is I created a fake set of information, I put it on a fake ISP, and I sent a fake email from a fake user saying, hey, I think this is some of the information from your bank. You guys might want to check it out. And the Excel spreadsheet had a nice little macro virus in it, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. I owned them, and it was that easy. And it was interesting, too, because I saw several different hosts hit it, and about the time I saw the sheriff's department hit it, that's when I called them and said, hey, that's me. But it's not hard to craft those kinds of attacks. Another interesting attack There was a guy who, bank president, who walked in, this was not my engagement, and said, "You will not social engineer me." Gauntlet on the floor. And the guy said, "Okay." So what he did is he found out that the bank president's wife was a cancer survivor. And so he crafted a persona, and he crafted a website, and he called her up, and eventually got to him in the persona of somebody working for the Susan B. Komen Foundation looking for a donation. He got a $10,000 check. At the closing of the engagement, he walked in and he handed the check back to the vice president, and he was furious. He was like, "How can you do this? This is off limits." And the guy said, "No, it's not. Social engineering is not hard. It's actually easier than you think." So having a security awareness plan, making people think about it. This morning, somebody asked me for a copy of the USENIX FOB because he said he lost it. I immediately sent a mail back to him saying, "Hey, I'll be glad to provide that. Tell me your name so I can find you on the attendee list." I didn't get anything back. I think things are really that easy. So in summary, let me explain some things. And there's not enough time, so let's just sum up. Your time to live on the internet is dependent on how involved you are with the information that's available. And I think that's a true statement. You will be attacked. I don't think there's anybody in here that doesn't think at some level somebody's gonna do something that will engender you to get attacked. And it may be just you plugged into the net, right? There's constant sweeps. But maybe you have an APT that wants to come after you. If you have an advanced persistent threat, you will not stop them. So what you have to do is you have to mitigate their attack by knowing when they get in and finding out, right? If somebody attacks you and gets into your network and you don't know when it happened and you don't find out for so many months, right, is that within your backup window? If it's not, can you restore from your backups? So you have to start thinking about these in a risk mitigation plan, right? That's why Iron Mountain is so popular, is because people are sending stuff, right? You need to make sure that your environment is secure so that when that happens, you don't end up in this case, right? You want to stop them. You want to make sure that they cannot attack you. And this is where you want to end up, right? You want to push them back and have the happy face, making sure that you cannot be attacked, or if you are, that you mitigate it as soon as possible. So real quick, first of all, minimize your detection, right? Insert yourself in that process. Know what your event network would look like from an attacker's point of view, right? Put on your bad boy hat or bad girl hat and go think about what you would do to break into your own network. Test yourself, right? Doesn't hurt. Get permission, that's important. But test yourself. Test your network from the outside. NASA does it, we do it all the time. Implement strong network monitoring, very important. From the inside, right? To manage your signal to noise. You can do it on the outside if you want, but you better have some good tools for figuring out what's what. Use those tools. Right? The hackers are standing on the backs of the people that have written all the tools that attack things, right? They're almost the Jurassic Park guys, right? They didn't earn the knowledge, but they're sure as hell using it. You should do the same. There's lots of people that have come before you that do these kinds of things. Go look out, search out those tools. Review your reports often, right? Use LogWatch. Look at your IDS reports. If you don't have an IDS, get an IDS. Find ways in your personal life and in your business and in your day-to-day to manage that signal to noise. That's an important thing. You have to be able to recognize a divergence, and to do that, you have to minimize how much crap's coming in your inbox, right? My spam filter gets hit all day, but guess what? A lot of my business mails are now going in my spam filter because I got tired of seeing them, because they were useless to me. So, get your colleagues in the process, right? How many of you guys have a Monday morning stand-up? Anybody? Anybody have a weekly meeting or a monthly meeting, right? Here's a really cool tool somebody said. They had the manager said, "Hey, I will give lunch once a month to the person that comes in and brings the best, most interesting piece of information out of the logs." Awesome. Outstanding, right? Gives everybody the initiative to go start looking through the logs and looking for information. Helps them understand things, gives them a purpose to it, right? And you get a little reward if you get something. You sit down and discuss it for 10 minutes at the beginning of your meeting. "Oh, look, I found this thing. Somebody was trying to break in because they did this Unicode extension on one of our URLs, and you can see where they were doing it. Isn't that cool? Oh, so we know that's not a problem? Get it out of logs. Hey, you've minimized your signal to noise." But it can be that easy. It has to be something you're all involved with. You don't want to be in the horse barn door, right? NASA, we're in the middle of this. Anybody here that we lost some laptops? It was not good. We're now all in the side of 2 weeks having to encrypt every single laptop device we have, including things like signal analyzers. And while, yes, we should have been doing it to start with, and I had no part in that, the onus is now that we all have to do this. Guess what's sliding? Support, backups, projects that we had planned. All that got put aside for this. So you do not want to be in the horse barn door. Make it part of your weekly work routine. Keep good backups, right? Everybody test their backups? Everybody? If you don't, you should. You really, really should be testing your backups. It doesn't have to be all the time, and it doesn't have to be consistently, but just randomly say, hey, I want to restore, you know, that picture of my daughter that I left on my desktop from 3 years ago. Even something that simple can be useful. Now, a lot of people, the backup systems, especially on the Macs and some of the other things that are doing Time Machine, that's made that really easy, right? But I'm talking long-term backups, right? Because you want to make sure that if you get hacked and it's outside your current backup window, right, it's over the size of your disk, that you can restore to something that's useful without having to rebuild everything from scratch. And I have been there and done that, and it sucks. Keep good change control processes. I know everybody's hearing about CF Engine, Puppet Chef, and all the rest of them. And those are all nice enablers, but what you really need is a good process as well. Make sure that everybody's aware of change control so that when there is a change to the system and somebody notices it and they know it shouldn't have happened, that will be an indicator. These are all processed. So in short, stay involved, right? That's the big deal, is get yourself in that process. Make sure that you are a part of what's going on. And you really need to baseline your environment. I mean, it's that simple. This is an old, old idea that's just being shouted out at the top of my lungs as much as I can. But I need you to think about it if you want to really improve the security of your environment. And with that, are there any questions? Yeah, go to the mic, say your name and affiliation, and fire when ready, Gridley.
David Nolan with Ariba. Couple things. You mentioned we all should be network administrators, too. I'm primarily a network administrator. So when you talk about the tools, the two that jumped to mind that you didn't have on your list, packet analysis is great, but NetFlow I can keep for longer periods. I can't keep raw packets forever.
Right? Yep.
Similarly, Tripwire is great for my systems. Rancid for my routers.
Yes.
Right. So if somebody's hacked into my routers, and I've seen it happen at an old job, we had an account show up on a switch that we didn't know why it was there. If somebody's hacking into your routers and your switches and you see that config change, that'll be the indicator.
Yep, I agree. And I've used, I've gotten several sites because somebody put something in the banner that led me to a password. So, yes. NetFlow is in Intel. There's a NetFlow plugin for NTOP, so you can pull that information from the switches as it is.
Yeah, the problem I actually have with NTOP, it's great in a small environment. It just doesn't scale when throwing lots of data at it.
If you want a good NTOP box, you better build a big one.
Right.
Because it has to deal with a lot of information in a very short period. And it wasn't designed, I think, for 10 gig enterprise network trunks. But it will do, you know, if you're in a small to medium business and you have an outbound, you know, a T1 or a 10 meg pipe to Verizon or something like that, that's fine. It will do all that you need for that.
Right. So the other thing that I've seen, my new parent company does this, so I'm looking forward to actually deploying this, is putting IDS IPS systems at the WAN edge of every office. So
on the inside or outside?
So it's corporate WAN. So
okay.
Between every set of offices.
Sure, absolutely.
On a global network.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can see that flow, and you can isolate it back and
yeah,
track
we down do it
happening.
At the building level. So we have sniffers, yeah. Taps at the building level that are feeding information back to the SEIM. So,
cool.
It's a good idea, sir.
Hi. So my question is.
What's your name?
David Sobel from MIT.
Okay.
With regard to educating users, because you know I agree that that's sort of the. You know, most appealing target for getting into networks. You know, how do you sort of let users know that they need to be more on guard with, you know, giving out information? Because I think there's a natural tendency for people to want to be helpful without sounding like a complete paranoid nut. Because I think that is sort of a fine line.
It is a fine line. So I have a talk on social engineering. And one of the things that I say when you're training your employees to deal with social engineering, there are several base tools you can use. One of them is a script. And I know that sounds cheesy, and you can put some divergence on it, but having a script that they will walk, and if they go outside the script for a reason, they need to articulate, you know, they need to document it, they need to have a specific set of circumstances that allow them to. Something that simple can help on a call center side. From the generic point of view, though, the best thing that we have found for teaching people about social engineering is demonstrating it, mm-hmm. is showing how easy it is. And it is hard, because you get people to say, oh, that never happens. It's when you demonstrate how easy it is to do that. The Sarah Palin one I use as an example is because it was very public and it was very easy and very obvious. Now, people's usual rejoinder to that is, well, my information isn't that public. And I said, oh, give me your name. And let me just see how public you are. And it's amazing, especially people that use Facebook. Facebook is a gift for social engineering. It really is. I don't care all the security protocols they can put in and all they want. All that information is so easy to pull out of there. Twitter is not as bad, depending on how you use it. Some people use it as a URL blog, but some people put, ooh, I just went to the bathroom. You know, they'll put their entire daily life on Twitter, and that kind of information becomes useful. As a penetration tester, the other examples I give are ones I've used before, like I have a Xerox suit with a hat. I have walked into a building, said, hey, your copier called in. It's got a problem with the fuser. They sent me out to look at it. Do you mind if I come in? They let me right in. I walk in behind it, there's a network drop, I plug in a wireless, and I'm golden, I'm set. You can backdoor somebody, right? They open the door, you have your business suit and your suitcase, you walk in right behind them just like you know you're there. Giving those examples, showing them how easy it is the only really effective way, because people don't believe it's really possible. The whole talk I do on social engineering, I actually go out of my way to hack the audience. And I give some examples of it, how easy it is to distract people from what's really going on, or to make them do what you want them to do when they really wouldn't do it normally. Behavior modification is an art, and I usually talk about it in terms of like a con man, right? Mm-hmm. A con man or a salesman or a politician, to me, they're all the same. That's their job, is to modify your behavior in ways that they give them an outcome that they want, right? Salesman wants you to buy that car, so they really want you to sit in it, right? A con man wants you to give them money or whatever they're trying to get out of you. But that's the art. So the only real way to defeat it is to study the art, give concrete examples that people can see and understand, and then they'll start to respect that the art is something they do need to respect.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions? Uh-oh.
My name is Marco. I'm a consultant. You said a couple of times through your talk about baselining, and yeah. You also referenced a bunch of monitoring technologies. Some of them I know, and some of them I don't know.
Okay.
One of the things I've noticed about most monitoring technologies is none of them do calculus. So, like you cited a couple of times, when you see something all of a sudden spike up way up, and if you don't have hard metrics in order to decide what is a spike, nothing will actually tell you that. There's only one product I know of, and it's crazy expensive.
Yeah, it is. So the whole idea of like a Bayesian filter or something like that, looking at logs and the output of them, I've actually been mentally playing around with a project that will visually give you a look at the security profile of your environment, and like this quadrant might be logs and this quadrant might be system load and these kinds of things, but give you something that you can start to identify, right? Human beings naturally are better at recognizing patterns than computers are, right? That's why we have these funny little things that you have to type when you're trying to log into some places, right? Oh, that's bad. So human beings have that capacity. So the more that ways that you can find for human beings to look at the data and find ways to identify divergence, that to me is the best way to do it. So that's why I advocate using things that give you visual graphs that you can get used to seeing, things that you lower your signal to noise so you're only seeing the important things in your logs and you can start to recognize when there's a change. Load falls into that, disk space falls into that. I mean, it's an across the board thing. And if you're doing your job right anyway, you should have some idea of what your loads and resource use are, because you can use that as a vehicle to go to management and say, hey, we need more machines. Or hey, I'm overloaded, why? Well, here's it is, look at all this work I'm having to do. I need more people to help me out. So those are things you should be doing. And if you use it in this context, it will help you improve security as well. Are there questions?
I want to ask a question. And I guess that mic isn't on.
No, you can use that one.
So a couple of other techniques I wonder if you'd comment on that weren't covered here. So one is a lot of these tools, when you do a penetration, they are dependent on access to a command and control site. So the ability to, you know, roach motel them, not allow the traffic to go back to the C2 site. So they got in, but they can't get anything out. So the value of those. And then joining a peer company sort of information exchange like the Defense Industrial Base. Wondering if you have any commentary on any of those.
Well, so the first one, when you're talking about roach moteling, we don't generally... Most environments have an inbound and outbound requirement. So the only way you can roach motel them, in my view, is if you can recognize that that is somebody that you don't want to let outbound, right? So I think that's harder. There are a lot of people that are doing the outbound blocking. NASA is doing it, but it's a real pain in the butt because it makes things that you expect to work not work like you expect them to work sometimes. A better tool that I've seen used is honeypots and in diverse places. So instead of trying to block it, you try to find them hitting things that have no value, and the honeypot systems they have today will act like a real user or a real computer and give them a lot of fake information. But the fact that they're banging on a segment of your network that doesn't really exist is probably an indicator you need to do something about it. Or they're banging on a host that shouldn't really be doing what it's doing. That's another really good indicator. So to that. As far as peer groups at the business level, I haven't really dealt with. We do, most of the things I would recommend, especially to this crowd, is getting with peer groups at their level doing security, right? So take the time to go to some of the conferences that are out there. Take the time to learn IT security. You don't have to learn this whole holistic thing, but you do need to understand enough to know what the threat is. And I think as long as you can keep the threat in mind, you can deal with security more appropriately in your environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah. All right, so any last questions? All right, round of applause, please, for Branson.
Thank you.